The Musician's Map ebook is the new definitive guide on building success in music. Whether you're just starting out, or you're looking for gigs, or you're trying to make a career, the Musician's Map ebook is right for you. The Musician's Map ebook contains 20 years of music industry experience distilled into a 40,000 word guide to achieving your goals in music. Can't read? Get the Musician's Map audiobook. 4.5 hours of author Kane Power speaking directly into your own ears. That's right, even you can still benefit from the Musician's Map Guide to Building Success in Music. Head to musiciansmap.org/books right now to get your copy of the Musician's Map ebook or audiobook. Get it today and receive a special one-time-only offer of a personal pat on the back from author and podcast personality Kane Power. The Musician's Map ebook and audiobook is also available at Amazon and Audible if you feel like supporting those giant websites as well. The Musician's Map ebook, your guide to building success in music. Proof of purchase required for pat on the back. To receive a pat on the back, you must travel to Raglan, New Zealand. Travel not included in purchase price. Welcome to the Musician's Map podcast. This week, my guest is Dave Baxter, otherwise known as Avalanche City. Dave's first album as Avalanche City, Our New Life Above Ground, was released in 2011 and reached number 4 in the New Zealand music charts, with the single Love 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 reaching number 1, going double platinum and remaining in the charts for 19 weeks. His second album, We Are For The Wild Places, was released in 2015 and charted at number 3, with its lead single Inside Out reaching number 1 and going platinum. Dave has been nominated for 4 New Zealand Music Awards and has won 2 APRA Silver Scroll Awards for Love Love Love. The song has also featured as part of advertising for a national TV channel and has become the theme song for a nationwide supermarket group. Over Skype, Dave shares how he began in music and how he started writing and performing as Avalanche City. We talk about writing Love 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 and how it achieved so much success, his writing process, music awards, and his upcoming album.
Well, I mean, I was always into music, actually. If I think back far enough, I was sort of wanted to do, I wanted to play violin when I was 5. I was terrible at it, obviously, because no 5-year-old can really play violin, but my parents let me. And then after that, I think I really wanted to play guitar, but I wasn't allowed to learn that until I was like 8. And then, so pretty much I've always been into music. But it wasn't really like my main focus until towards the end of high school, when I started to think about like jobs and what I wanted to do with my life and things like that. Mm. I think before that I probably wanted to do more with like science and things like that. But then once I, towards the end of high school, I realized that science was really hard and a little bit boring. So I did music instead. It's been awesome. Never looked back.
And so you started playing guitar around like 8, you said?
Yeah, 8, and wasn't always in like bands and high school bands and stuff, and then started playing in hardcore bands at the end of high school through uni. Mm. After uni, I got a job working in a recording studio called Cog, and that was sort of like, we did a lot of music for adverts and things like that, and it was sort of my intro into the music industry, and like I guess like into doing music professionally. And it gave me a little bit of a work ethic, which was pretty good, because you couldn't have like when you're an artist and when you're a writer, you can have bad days and you can have like creative blocks, but when you're writing and someone is paying you for it, you can't have creative blocks. So it was actually good for like work ethics and stuff.
Yeah. So what about like, because that's really interesting to me, because when I used to know you, you were playing in One Must Fall and The Chase.
Oh, yeah.
Were you always interested in lots of different styles of music, or what was the kind of decision that sort of led you away from playing that style into the style that you're playing now?
I think I always listen to other types of music, and like I was never just like one kind of only hardcore, you know. And so I listened to a lot of things, and I was actually kind of always felt conflicted between, I really liked like good pop music and metal and stuff like that, and it was kind of a funny little pull almost. I don't know why. I just walked into a music store one day and I saw this acoustic guitar there, and I was like, I played it and it just felt really good. I kind of been sort of looking, thinking about playing acoustic music, but it wasn't until I sat down and played this guitar that I was like, I need this guitar. And like, it just felt right. You know, when you have those moments where you just, where things just feel really right. And actually, I think that as musicians, you kind of like search for those moments a little bit more, because it's kind of like a little bit of a dark art, and you're always like looking inside yourself to like what feels right. And I bought the guitar and then wrote some songs, and then Avalanche City began.
there's got to be more than that, because it's I never knew that you could sing.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah, so there is more. It's like the simplified version.
Let's go into it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So I bought the guitar and I started writing like little acoustic, like finger-picking things and like little ditties and stuff. And I really wanted to sing. This is one thing that's really weird is I started learning how to sing when I was 25. So I never sang before that. And in fact, like I couldn't sing. I've got a really good ear for pitch because of music and recording and producing and things like that. So I can hear when things are out of tune, which is probably the worst thing for someone who's trying to learn how to sing, is because you can hear how bad you sound, but you can't do anything about it. And so I don't know why I was just really drawn to singing. Maybe thinking back, maybe it was because I'd only ever been in bands and I wanted something that was my own thing, you know. Wanted a project that was just all my own, that I could write whatever I wanted. I didn't have to get it past the drummer or the bass player or whatever, you know. And I wanted to just have this project that was all mine. And so I decided I wanted to learn how to sing and write my own songs and stuff. And you know, I remember having a coffee with a friend of mine and telling him about it, and he was like, oh dude, I taught myself how to sing. And I never really heard of that before. I've at uni we went to the same course, so we know that there are people here there who could sing and people there that couldn't sing. And the people that could sing had just done it all their lives. And so I thought that it was sort of something that you were just kind of born with, you know. Like, I thought that it was something that you either a singer or you're not, you know. And I'd attempted it a little bit before, and so in some of the classes we had to sing, and it was always the worst part of my year was the moment where you had to sing in front of the class. It's awful. And so my friend was like, oh, I taught myself how to sing, and I had no idea. And he said, yeah, your voice is actually a muscle. Like, your voice box is actually a muscle, and you can train it and you can develop it and it can become stronger. And if you understand pitch, you can kind of hit things, you know, and you can hit pitches if you get it stronger. And it was just like mind blowing for me at that moment that you could actually learn how to sing. And so I started trying, and I like practiced all the time. I wasn't doing a lot of work at that time. I'd quit my studio job and I was teaching guitar. And so I had a little bit of downtime, and every spare moment I was writing a little like melody or something, and then singing it and getting better and writing simple lyrics and stuff like that. And then I'd record it and listen back, and I'd hear how bad I was, or like if I was like getting better and stuff. And it gradually over time I started noticing an improvement, and that was actually really cool. Like, after about 3 weeks of doing it, I noticed a big improvement, and it was like this defining moment where I was like, holy crap, this is actually working.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, it was, and so that was sort of the initial thing.
it's inspirational, really, because there are so many people that want to sing. I see this constantly because I'm always on message boards and stuff. And people are saying, "Yeah, can I learn to sing? I'm 30 or I'm 25. Is it too late? Yeah. You know, what do I need to do?" So to actually talk to someone who started from where you were and sort of and now you're, you know, number one songs.
I mean, I'm not a frilly singer or anything like that. I can't do any like Beyonce trills or anything, but
yeah, but I mean, you're definitely,
I can hit a few notes.
I would have thought that your ear training experience, would have helped.
No, it really didn't. I mean, it helps you understand, for those people who don't know what ear training is. We, did a course where, it's just a music course, really, and the part of it was ear training, where you had to look at a sheet of music and sing the notes on it. And I don't know, I just found it terrifying. I didn't think it helped. If anything, it made it worse, because I was like, oh man, I really can't sing. Like, there's no way I'm hitting these notes. Yeah. Like, because to sing intervals like that, it's really difficult without any music as well. Like, it's just, I feel like that made it worse almost.
Yeah.
I feel like that like solidified in my brain that I couldn't sing.
that was a trying time. It was daunting for a lot of people, eh?
Yeah.
Especially when you have singers in your class and they just
it's the worst. Oh yeah. You had to form a crew, of the non singers that we could all be like bad together and it would be okay.
What about Love, because that was, you've had massive success with that song. How did it come about? How did you write it?
I was just writing at that point. I was just kind of I was just writing songs. I think I'd played my first gig at that point. And a friend of ours organized this sort of once a month kind of gig called Tea Light Acoustics, and it was like fairly small gigs, like maybe 30 or 40 people would come along. And one time she organized a gig where it was everyone's first time playing, and so I kind of played there, and that kind of gave me a little bit of confidence. And then I think maybe one or two more gigs, and I started like really pushing at the songwriting thing and started writing a lot more songs, and Love kind of came about in that spurt. And I think I was recording a punk band in the day, and we finished early. And then that evening, that afternoon, I wrote Love of Love in like a space of like half an hour or an hour, and then thought, oh, that's a cool song, and then played it live. I don't think I played it live that night. I didn't have the confidence at that point to do that, but I played it pretty soon after, and then. And then soon after that, I decided I didn't like the song and I didn't play it for a while. and then a friend's band, the Paper Kites, covered it. And I thought, oh, that's, maybe it is cool if they like it and they're covering it. So I put it back into my set, and then I got a grant for it, actually. Got to put it into New Zealand On Air. Unwittingly, I put it in for a video and a new recording grant, which you're not allowed to do, and you're supposed to just choose one.
Mm.
And they kind of, when they receive those grants, they have like a panel of people, and I think at that point they were going to the radio stations and checking if they'd play the songs or checking if the song was good. They took it to someone from a big radio station, and he was like, "Ah, it's a good song, but it probably won't be a radio hit. Probably won't be that radio friendly." And then they took it to the guy from C4, you know, remember the old music channel?
C4.
And he was like, "Oh yeah, we'll play this song." And so they're like, "Oh cool, here's a video grant then." So I got a video grant for it, and then we released it as a single, and we must have plugged it for like 3 months to the radio stations, and they sort of played it a couple of times, but nothing more than that.
Mm.
And I never really took off on radio. And then and then just super random, just get a call from some person that was like, hey, it was from like a audio production place called Franklin Road. And he was like, hey, I'm wanting to put your song on a TV2 commercial. Do you want to do it? And I was like, okay. And so we put it on the TV2 like main brand commercial thing, and it just took off. And then it went, then radio picked it up, and it like went straight to number one after that. So it was just like this weird little thing where we were like, oh, cool, they C4 likes our song, and then we were like, oh, but radio doesn't, that's okay. I didn't really think it would go on there anyway. And then suddenly that.
So how long after you'd kind of released it before it actually hit number one?
I think I would have released it in like October or something like that. And then it would have hit number one in like April next year.
Wow.
Yeah, so a long time actually. Yeah.
And so it literally was just a random call. Like you were, how did that sort of happen?
Yeah. Well, I'm not actually sure how that happened, but I released the album online for free, and that was sort of back when Spotify wasn't around, and it was to release music for free was kind of quite radical. And some people were like, why would you do that? You're devaluing your music and stuff, and people just thought it was like, some people thought it was genius, some people thought it was a terrible idea.
Yeah.
But I just kind of put it online. I thought that it would just be more fun, and I'd worked hard on it. And at that stage, I was only playing shows to like 50 people. So I was like, well, I could sell my album to like 50 people, but maybe not even all of them would buy it. So
yeah,
I was like, oh, there's no point. I'll just put it on the internet and see what happens. And it took off. It was good. And I think it spread really fast, actually, and that's probably how they heard it.
Mm.
It's just through general people sharing the music.
And if you don't mind, kind of, can we talk a bit about sort of the sync aspect of it? Like how long did TV2 have the song for? And what sort of, like, was it a set length of time? Or how did that happen or work?
I think they might have like booked it for like 6 months, yep. And then they renewed it for another 6 months, maybe, or maybe it was I think it might have been something like that.
Yeah.
They renewed it. I don't think it was on there for 2 years. I think it was just 1 year. So they must have done 6 months and then renewed it.
And then once they've kind of, they're happy with their cycle or whatever, it got picked up by New World.
Yeah, that was a couple of years later, and then New World picked it up, and they've had it for like, it's going into its third year now, actually. That's crazy. It's been incredible. I feel like I've kind of like won the music lottery in a way. It was just random, you know, like it's just a song that one day I didn't wake up and be like, I'm going to write a song that will hopefully get on some TV ads.
Yeah, yeah.
I was just done recording for the day, and I was like, oh, what should I do with the rest of the day?
Did you have that in mind? Were you thinking like, were you thinking of an audience, or were you thinking of like a particular kind of demographic or a purpose for the song, or was it literally just writing music?
No, I mean, I think you have like things in the back of your mind, like always, like at that time I was playing like small shows, and you kind of write with your audience in mind in a way.
Yeah.
You kind of write like, what would I feel? What would I like to be playing to these people? And what would I like to hear on, like, from an artist, you know? So I was kind of like just exploring things like that. And I really like catchy music, like going back to the, like into metal and pop music all at the same time. I really like music that I can hum and sing back to, and that has like something that kind of grips you, you know? But then yeah. I also can't like handle cheese pop, so I kind of like indie music done in a catchy way.
Yeah, yeah.
And so like that's kind of the line that I was trying to like walk across there was like this cool kind of sound done in a catchy poppy kind of way. So I think that's kind of always been my focus.
Yeah. I've talked to a couple of people about this, and there seems to be a phenomenon
phenomenon.
but quite often songwriters who have had a hit song, they'll say, "Oh yeah, I wrote it in 20 minutes before I walked on stage one night." Or
it's so annoying when they say that, eh? But I'm saying that now.
Do you think there's some sort of truth in it, where if the idea is that good, or just the mood is right, or something clicks and it just comes out, maybe you've got something special? Or
I don't know. I mean, it doesn't, it's like, yeah, it just seems to be that, like, yeah, like there's no real rhyme or reason for it. It just kind of like happens. And I don't know, I feel like as an artist and as a songwriter, you're searching for those moments where it's like a concept. Like I kind of almost think of it more like a concept pops into your head.
Mm.
And it might be that you've heard something or someone said something, and you'll be like, crap, that would be a really cool concept for a song. And so I kind of know sometimes when it's hitting, and you have to kind of drop everything and write. But yeah, it almost is. It's like this spark of inspiration, and it's a thing that will eventually happen if you write a lot. And yeah, I've talked to some people about it, eh? And some people won't write until they get that feeling.
Mm.
And some people are just 9-to-5 writers, you know, like go to the studio and write every day, and see what comes out, you know. But I always find that my best work is when I'm not in the studio just writing, because I have to. It's my best work is when I'm out, or I'm doing something, or I've just finished like driving or recording someone or something, and this like concept or spark has kind of popped into my head, and I'm like, a song like that would be cool, and I can kind of picture it in my brain.
Mm. Do you have a method of capturing that, like, immediately, or are you able to hold on to it?
No. If I'm out, sometimes it's lost, and you sort of have to do it in the moment.
Yeah.
And sometimes sometimes it's not a thing where you get it straight away. Sometimes it's a for instance, if I talk about the way that I wrote Inside Out, which was a song off my second album, and that was one of I was in this time where I was getting up every morning, going to the studio and writing, and for some reason that day, I just put like a 4-to-the-floor kick drum on, and then just like played this guitar riff. And as soon as I played the guitar riff, I was like, that riff, I need that riff, and only that riff, and that's the only riff that's going to be in the song. And I just kind of knew, and it took me a while. It probably took me like the rest of the day to kind of figure out what the song was going to be around that riff.
Yeah.
But I knew that riff was like the crux of the song. And I must have written like maybe three different songs over top of that riff, and it wasn't until the third song that I was like, this is feeling right, and I kind of pursued that one. So it's not always like the first thing. And a similar thing with this next album that I'm writing. I had this lyric idea that I had like 2 years ago, and I just knew that lyric was a cool lyric, and the way that I sang it was cool, and it was just like just a few words, and I've had probably about like 5 different versions of songs based around that one. It wasn't until about 3 months ago. I knew that all of them were wrong, but I kept trying, and it wasn't until about 3 months ago where I was just like, you know what, I'm gonna revisit that thing, and I like, it just clicked for some reason. It just kind of clicked on that on the fifth time around through that song, like 4 other versions of a song that didn't work, and until you finally find the right one. I think that's part of like, if songwriting is just not giving up, you know.
what are you doing now? You're writing for a new album. Was this be your third album?
Yeah, writing for the third album. Yeah.
Is it
writing and recording at the same time?
And is it full time?
Yeah, I'm trying to do it less full time, this one. I did my second one full time and it was actually really hard. And so I'm doing this one. I guess right now it's probably slightly more full time than I was before. I've been writing for like other people and trying to do other things other than just like 100% focused on me and my stuff. It's a weird thing to explain because it shouldn't be a problem. It should be like the best thing ever to work on your own music. But it can sometimes just be really hard. You can just sometimes like overthink things and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
So
it's introspective, isn't it?
Oh yeah. So I just disappear down this like rabbit hole.
Yeah.
Of overthinking everything.
Have you got like a home studio set up, or are you going into a certain studio? What's the deal there?
Yeah, I have a home studio at my home in Tauranga, and then I come up every week and hire like a little studio up here. So just like whatever one's available, friends ones. Like my friend Joe Farris has a really good studio. Hey. Tomorrow I'm working in Nick Mander's studio. But yeah, it's cool. It adds a little bit of structure. And it kind of means that I work around these few days, but yeah, it's starting to like gear into full production mode on the album, which is cool.
And have you got like a set number of songs that you're aiming for to choose from, or what's the
deal? I did that last album. I had like 30 songs, and it was crazy. The last album was really hard, actually. It was incredibly hard. Like, people say the second album is the hardest, and I kind of didn't really believe them, but it actually was. It was so hard. And then this one, I'm trying to be a little bit more laid back on. I'm sort of not finishing off a lot of songs until I know that they're right, and I'm kind of I'm kind of being a little bit more selective about the songwriting, and I don't think I'm going to write like 20 or 30 songs. I'm just kind of going to write like the amount for the album, like 10 or 11 or whatever.
Yep.
So I'm sort of like halfway through recording that.
Yeah. You won a Silver Scroll. What was that like, man? Did you know that you were nominated, and like when you were nominated?
Yeah. You know you're nominated. It was crazy. I don't think I'd ever won anything in my life at that point, eh? And certainly like nothing that I could remember anyway, so nothing important. It was bizarre. It was just such a weird year that it all kind of like exploded, and then all like the attention kind of focused towards you. I kind of like, not, I'm not a super like attention seekery, so like, or like I'm not like great in the spotlight, so I was kind of a little bit like deer in the headlights a little bit.
Yeah.
But it was amazing. I mean, like, to get recognition like that is crazy. It was really cool.
Does it kind of change how you approach music after that? Like, do you feel different in any way?
I'm pissed when I don't receive Silver Scrolls, that's for sure. Nah. it's funny, the awards are like, I've had a few conversations with musicians about the awards. Eh? It's like you don't care about them. And you don't think about them until they roll around.
Yeah.
And then you're like, oh, crap, I'm nominated for this category. Oh, I'm not nominated for that category. What? What? And suddenly you feel like you should be nominated or whatever. And like, it's funny. And then you get to the awards and you're like, I don't care about awards. I don't care about awards. I don't even care if I win or not, you know?
Yeah.
And then they like call out the name, and you know that you can see the cameraman because they're like, they come up and like stand right in front of you and put the camera like straight on your face, and you're like, oh. And they like read it out, and you're like, I don't care. And then when they say your name, you're like, I have to win this. You're like, I have to win this. I have to win this. And then you don't, and you're like, I didn't care about it anyway.
Yeah, sweet as.
But but you're still a little bit gutted, but you're not sure why. But yeah, no, you try to. It's a cool night. Awards nights are great, and you try not to overthink them too much because it's just a lottery, you know. Like everyone. There's so much good music coming out at the moment. And to be honest, sometimes I think that awards nights should almost not be awards nights, where people are like, this person is the best at this, and this person is the best at this. It should just be like, hey, we all released really cool music this year, and we've all worked really hard, and we've tried really hard. Let's just celebrate. That's my two cents anyway.
But then how would we know who is the best?
I know, right?
What was the best song?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. I don't care about who the best is unless it's me.
Yeah.
No. I've never won a music award, so maybe that's just my approach to it. But I think to be honest, it's cool. It's a cool way to recognize people who've worked really hard and like achieved cool things. But you try not, other than that, you just don't. You try not to let it get into your brain.
Yeah. What about for people listening, for songwriters who are maybe trying to achieve similar things that you have? Do you have kind of any advice to put people in the right direction? How they could, how they could kind of write songs that have been as effective as you have?
It's always a hard one to answer. I pretty much think if you want to do something well, you just have to do it as much as you possibly can. I was listening to your last one with Kieran.
Jasper,
yeah. And I think they just said, because they were talking about the job, right, the full-time job, and how like you just don't have enough time to write music if you have a full-time job and you're coming home like exhausted every day. You kind of need to put yourself in a position where you can, if you really do care about it and you really want to do it well, you just have to be obsessive over it. The only way to do something really well is to be absolutely obsessive and compulsive about it and just do it all the time and think about it all the time. And that's kind of like, a lot of people who are really good at doing what they do, they're obsessive people anyway, and they like, will make time for it, you know. Like if you really wanted to do music, you literally just have to make time for it. Mm. And it was cool for me because I'd quit my studio job, because it was just eating up my days. You go to the studio and you record other people and it's cool. It was actually what I wanted to do. It was like my dream job, but after a while, I was like, I wanted to write music and I wanted to like, you know, be excited about music. And I found it was kind of just pulling me down. I feel like it could be the same for any job that you're in or anything that takes up majority of your time. So I kind of freed up a bit of time. And I wrote that first album while I was teaching guitar, and wrote the first album while I was waiting for students. So if a student didn't turn up, I'd just be like, sweet, I'm going to write a song. And it was cool because I suddenly had the time to be able to do it, and as soon as I started doing that, I just became absolutely obsessive over it and started thinking about it, and like I'd have like little bounces of instrumentals and I'd write lyrics to them in the car while I was driving to like a school that I was going to teach at and stuff, and every spare moment would be like thinking about songs and stuff like that, there's no magical trick or magical formula. You just have to do it as much as possible and find what makes you excited about it as well. It's like just think about what you would like to hear from an artist, or what's a cool spin on music that you haven't heard yet. Find your own way to kind of say something new, you know, or find your spin on something. If that makes sense, does that make sense?
And that's the podcast for this week. Thank you so much to my guest, Dave Baxter. Make sure to check out Avalanche City at avalanchecity.com facebook.com/avalanchecity and instagram.com/avalanchecity. Dave's choice for band of the week is Bear's Den and their album Red Earth and Pouring Rain, which he describes as the ultimate nighttime driving album. Check out Bear's Den at bearsdenmusic.co.uk and facebook.com/bearsdenmusic. You can find links to every site I've mentioned in the podcast description. This podcast and the website musiciansmap.org is dedicated to sharing knowledge and advice about music and the music industry. It's all about community, honesty, and positive progress. The experiences, stories, and advice shared on the podcast are given freely with the hope that you can relate to them and benefit from them. If you've found this podcast enjoyable or useful, make sure to check out the Musicians Map ebook and audiobook about building success in music. You'll find it at musiciansmap.org/books, Amazon, and Audible. And buying a copy of the book directly contributes to the continuation of this podcast. There's also a free ebook, How to Get Your Music Heard. Go to musiciansmap.org/free-book to get your copy. If you have a suggestion for the podcast or for the YouTube channel, or you just want to get in touch and say hello, please do so via the Musicians Map Facebook group or by email at kane@musiciansmap.org. Thanks for listening and stay positive.